This is a production of Cornell University.
UA meeting, March 26, 2008.
Agenda. I think Ari, I think you just spoke about one. Just a brief. Brief in new business. How's that?
Cornell store report.
Okay. Any others? Okay. Let's see. We have two bundles of minutes. If we could just glance at them. I've looked through them. I don't know. Probably everybody else has had the opportunity to.
Did you give us copies of the minutes? They're here.
Yeah, they're in the new packet.
Oh, yeah, I got it. Draft minutes. Okay. So draft minutes from February 13th and from January 30th meetings. Anybody want to take more time to look at them, or are you happy with how things look? All right, I can have a motion to accept the minutes from the 30th of January. Mm-hmm. Ellis, second. Come on. Tamara. I'm sorry. Tamara. Good. Then vote. All in favor? Unanimously received February 13th. Any additions, corrections? Well, we have somebody moving them. Oh, okay. Anyone want to move these? Oh, take a look at them. 13th with the minutes for the meeting about the campus code. Hello. Do I hear a motion to approve? We can debate them afterwards. Bill? Second? Ellis? All in favor? Any questions, additions? Okay, anybody in favor of approving minutes? Opposed? Abstain? One abstention. Two abstentions. They pass. Old business. Committee report on child care. Abe Strook.
Abe, would you be willing to hold forth?
Yep.
Having just.
And Amy.
And yeah. Amy, Richard, and I, and Amy O'Donnell are all serving on the child care committee, which we formed, the UA formed by resolution last fall, and is actually a subcommittee of the Family Services Committee, which I believe we may hear something about today as well. Although right now it's been acting as a freestanding entity more or less because it's got a big agenda associated with the opening of the new child care center. There should be one page in the handout that you got that is a very brief summary of what we've been up to and gives you some links that you could follow to get more information. I've also brought some other information. Amy's brought some other information about the new center, as well as a more detailed list of what we've been considering, which should give you a sense of the degree of collaboration that we've had with human resources in talking about and making decisions about the new center. A key point is that the new center that has been proposed is on track to open in the fall. It'll serve up to 158 children, 48 infants, 50 toddlers, 60 preschool age children. It'll be run in a Cornell-owned building that's being built right now on North Campus. It'll be run, though, by a private outside company, Bright Horizon. And so this is a very brief list of what this child care committee has been on the major items on the agenda. In last summer, before the architect's drawings were done, we worked with them on design of the center. Right now, we've been working a lot on enrollment policies. Interestingly, the committee chose to have a completely unbiased enrollment policy, which is basically counter to all other policies at Cornell, as far as I can tell, but is democratic in a way that it has lots of clarity, so meaning there's no preference for faculty, staff, or students. There's no quotas based on race or any other characteristic of the child. The subsidies it'll be a flat fee, and the child care grant, which is run out of human resources, will be the subsidy from Cornell, and that puts this center on equal footing with all other centers in the community in terms of subsidies from Cornell. And this decision, which is not an obvious one, most centers run on a sliding scale. This decision my interpretation, based most strongly on the desire to not punish and not discourage other child care centers in the community. There will be full and part-time care. There is trouble on the committee, and there's lots of questions at the information sessions about the child care, child-to-teacher ratios that have been decided on for this center. And basically, Bright Horizons has chosen to go with the minimum standards set by the national the National Young Childhood Association of Childhood Education. And so this feels like a minimum, it's not at the level that many other centers in Ithaca are at, but changing those ratios would take the budget into a place where it's being accessible for large parts of the community, even with the child care grant. So that's the place where I think this child care committee, and maybe even the UA, over in the coming periods of time, could maybe try to influence Cornell in its financial commitment to this center. Right now, it's just cost up $5 million to build the building. It's not feeling like subsidizing this child care at a higher level. But I think it could be convinced over time to find resources to make the level of care higher at a reasonable cost. And finally, there is an agreement with Human Ecology to continue teaching activities with this new center, so to continue some version of the lab school mission that was existing at the Cornell's Early Childhood Center in Human Ecology, and that is still being worked out. What exactly that will look like. So concretely, right now it'd be useful for you all to give anybody in your division or department information about these information sessions, and you have a schedule for these. Amy and I just came back from the second one for graduates and professional students and undergraduates, but the ones for staff and faculty are next month, and the enrollment process will start from April 30th or May 8th. Will be the last moment to say I want to be part of this unbiased lottery. So I have, if you're interested in more details of what we've been discussing, including some numbers, for example, budget numbers, I have some documents that have partially finalized decisions on those items. And some other things that are still on the agenda, and I'd be happy to share them with you, although they're not yet ready for
publication
because they still may shift.
So what we're working on as well is putting together a very comprehensive, what we call FAQ list, And part of the reason we don't have that here for you tonight is because Lynette's office is finalizing the child care grant subsidies for both the faculty, staff, and students, and the and so that what they've also done in this process is taken it as an opportunity to relook at how these child care grants affect these communities and are they serving the communities effectively. And so as soon as we have the specifics, we will get those out to you. And if you want flyers, you've probably seen little flyers. I have PDFs of those flyers, so if you want to put those in your department for the staff and faculty information session, send me an email or Abe an email. We have PDFs that are email manageable size PDFs that can go up that you can send out.
Questions? Elizabeth?
So I think it was the overhead side, and then you admit the classes within the category that probably the teachers by a lottery, not by any kind of revenue.
The initial opening, right. So everybody who wants to be in this center at this initial opening goes into this lottery, and they will draw family names out. There's no preference, there's no separate hat for any specific group of people. Everybody goes in the same one as a family name. After they have filled the spot, then they keep drawing names, and it will go to a wait list. And after that, it will be a wait list as many people are familiar with from the other center. It's just that for this initial opening, when you have so many people applying for these spots all at one time, it's hard to say, well, this person deserves one more because they heard about this new center opening, you know, a week before somebody else did.
But even in the future,
it'll be waitlist. There will not be a lottery every year.
There will not.
It will be a waitlist for the future.
There will never be a lottery again unless it has to close and reopen. It's a one-time lottery and then a waitlist. The waitlist will be managed in a completely unbiased manner as well. That's the current decision.
But the subsidies are
need-based? Yes. The child care grant is a need-based grant based on your income and the number of children you have. And so that's all administered out of the, correct me, work life.
Work diversity, equity, and life quality.
Thank you. I never get that title correct.
It rolls off my tongue.
W-dub.
Yeah.
Any others? Dan?
I just had a question. Now that this one is underway, have the committee begun planning for the next center or for on-site daycare around different parts of campus?
I
mean,
So Mary, as Mary Offerman told us all last fall, she has ambitions to go on to another off-site center and then potentially an on-site center. We have not discussed that yet. One thing to note is that HR is hiring at least one, if not two, full-time people to work on these questions. Right now, they're running with a staff that is responsible for many other things and is trying to get this center open on time. So, like I say here, for future, I think that's where this committee has a role to play in the coming years after this center's open, because to take advantage of HR's ambition to continue this.
Well, we don't. I wanted to address one question you raised, which was one suggestion you made, which is we all take flyers to our department. I've often wondered about when people say that to the UA, it makes it appear as if we all are representative of the whole campus, and in fact, although we are a diverse body, there's still lots of areas of the campus that are not represented by the UA. So it strikes me that instead of the UA being a channel for letting the information be out, there should be a campus-wide circulation.
Oh, there is as well. Yeah. We're just trying to get the information out to as many people as possible.
Well, I was thinking, in fact, of a general
university-wide email alert to all departments and all faculty. Pardon me?
It's going out through the HR bulletin, and it's gone out through all the student bulletins. And it's also gone up, there have been big flyers that have gone up in all the buildings. So we're pursuing, or Lynette's office is pursuing as well, all of the available resources for advertising. Any group that we've talked to, we continually say, please help inform people, because we want everybody to be informed that this is an option.
Okay. And the other thing was that undergraduates are potentially patrons of this. Okay, that's important to keep in mind as well. Well, thanks very much. We'll have to move on.
I have some packets here from Bright. Just one last thing. I have some packets here from Bright Horizons that they've been passing out at these information sessions in terms of their curriculum and what kind of their broad education vision in terms of these centers are. So if anybody's interested in them, I think I've got six here.
Maybe put them down by the
put them back there, so if you want to take them with you.
Terrific. Thanks very much. I don't know, Bill, you sent around a note. I think it's appropriate for you just to say a word about the family services.
I'll try and keep it brief. I did send around the note that the meeting. I was not at the meeting, unfortunately, but this is the second meeting that the Family Services Committee has been formed within the UA. They are mainly working on self-generating ideas. It's on the second page of the government looks like priorities. They did have Michelle R.E., if I put that name, in the office of WDELP. And she did go through a lot of detailed information. I'm not going to go through all of that in here. Hopefully everybody got a copy of it through email. The next meeting is April 7th at 9 o'clock. I'm going to send a note. And I guess the one key thing that's not in the notes, I did put in the email, is that Lynette Chappelle Williams is still the acting chair, but she is heavily pursuing trying to find somebody else in that role.
I don't believe those were attached to the last minute, and we can attach this now as an official report.
Okay.
Attach those notes, and if you want to add what you've added in the email that wasn't in those notes, just send them on to, I guess, to Denise, and then they'll be appended as part of the notes for the meeting.
Sure.
Thank you. New business. The Codes and Judicial Committee, I'd love to get through this fairly quickly. If you would please just look at the letter and then glance through the attachment. Actually, rather than do this as a report, since the letter says most everything that I'd want to say about it, I'd like to take an opportunity just to take the time for questions. And I say at the bottom of the letter, as the UA liaison, I offer a resolution. And I thought I'd consult with Ari, our parliamentary expert, to say, does it need to be a formal resolution, or can we just use the letter as a kind of a vehicle of resolving that we accept these? What we are basically doing is waiting for three others
That is that will be worked upon over the next month, and then we'll come to our April 23rd meeting. But I thought that we should take action on these so that April 23rd we don't have a long period of time, or we can take the full period of time to deal with the other three.
Did you want me to say?
Yeah.
Speak to that. I would say for something as big as changes to the campus ahead of time, that there should be a resolution. And you probably want to do this as a whole package with the other changes anyway, so.
Also.
So, and it was my understanding just from the CJC conversation that the intent was to show
progress.
The progress rather than you recommend an action on the report at this point.
Yeah. Okay, I think maybe there's such a thing as some kind of resolution of encouragement or acceptance that
a straw vote.
Yeah, that's right. Because I'd like to do that because I want to do more substantial. I want to have this be out of the way. I want to have debate on these seven if there is necessary. That's necessary.
From a process standpoint, we're comfortable with that. So long as it's understood that these changes, in order for them to be implemented, need to be adopted in a resolution.
Yes, I understand that.
But as a sense of the body.
Yeah, I think what I meant by saying accept the actions of the CJC with respect to these seven was not that we propose these as a resolution which will then go to the president, but rather that we accept them so that we can then. So I propose that resolution of support or a vote of, what was your word, Charlie? Straw vote. I propose a straw vote, but and I'd like to have debate on the questions now. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll have a resolution on these to go to the discussion, right?
Yes.
I mean, this is the CJC impression. The UA.
I'm sorry. What?
The UA approved these to go back. To
yes. But I'm trying to get the UA to talk about these now so that when the three come to us in April, we will not have to deal with these as well.
Why can't we just vote on these?
Well, we can vote on them, but I don't have a formal resolution to propose them because once we have a formal resolution, these seven will go to the president, and I'd rather take the straw vote or the word of approval and get the debate out of the way for these now, so that we'll have the time available on the 23rd to talk about the other three. That's what I'm trying to do now.
The three remaining are the biggies?
The three remaining are substantial, yeah.
How will the other three impact these here? This is all one code.
Right now we're not. We are presuming that the other three are independent variables and that they will not change these seven.
But I'm somewhat leery. Go ahead.
You're leery?
I'm somewhat leery to pass part of it and not without all of it together.
I want to have debate on it rather than pass.
We're going to do all 10 at once.
You have to do all 10 at once. Right. But I just don't want
to discuss these seven.
Oh, okay.
I don't want to, in April, get us started on the other three and then somebody say, well, I actually don't like number, you know, thus and such that we talked about last time, because I think it's a lot better to get our debate about these and discussion about them out of the way now. And that's not to say, I mean, I say my resolution, if it were one, would be to accept them, but this is the place of discussion, and we have a right to discuss them. So let's start on that rather than worry about the procedures right now. Does anybody have anything to say? These were sent around a day or so ago. I realize that maybe not had the time to look at them too much, but please do. While you're looking at them, I can say, as I said in my letter, that these were worked upon by the CJC, including ad hoc and ex officio members of many camps representing different areas of the university for five two-hour-long sessions. I think five is right, isn't it, Kathleen? Except for one, and there's 6 weeks, so it's five sessions, five two-hour sessions. And so these came out of that, and the other three we spent a good amount of time on the other three. In fact, these basically were done as Kevin Claremont predicted in the meeting on February 13th. These were done in an hour. And then we started on the other three, or maybe an hour and a half. Then we started on the other three. And that's been taking this period of time since then. That's the other nine, 8.5 hours. The remaining three are in short form. Right of president change a penalty for certain categories of offenses, a penalty assessed by the hearing board. Not a verdict, but a penalty. That's one. The second one is right of a counsel to be present in certain offenses. And the third one is a standard of proof, which is whether it be clear and convincing, which it is presently, or preponderance of evidence. Those are the three.
You said change, but I thought originally he was asking to divide.
No, it's change. It's change. I doubt whether the representation of the president's interest was not just to make more severe. It was also potentially to make less severe.
I think it's the way it was worded.
When I say the representation, this is what people have told us is the intent. Yes, Kathleen. David's question is, well, we want comments about individual propositions. By comments, yes, please. That's what we're open for discussion.
Okay.
David.
About number one, I very much appreciate losing the what was the thing in the Krauss report that putting it right up there that you are obliged to cooperate. And moving it, I think, is a step in the right direction. I think that there's an ambiguity here, although I like the proposal as it stands. The hearing can proceed even if he or she chooses to remain silent, just to get the ambiguity between if and only if and if.
Could you tell us the line you're talking about?
Action.
Right under the action.
Oh, right under the action. Yeah, the hearing can proceed
even if.
Even if.
it sounds as though it's a requirement that he or she chooses to remain silent in order for the hearing to be possible.
Right. Kathleen, you got that? We can bring that back. I think that's great clarification. Any others? Any other comments? Questions? Okay. You sure? Everybody fine? Okay, great. Yes, go ahead.
Do you mean on that particular...
Oh, no. On anything. On everything.
Okay. Nobody else wants to jump
go
in?
Go for it.
Confidentiality of hearing and records.
Which page is that?
This is the last page.
Okay.
I'm not sure I understand the change between required and authorized. That is to say, with required, it sounds as though the university has a stake in protecting confidentiality, but will, of course, when required by law, make an exception. With the revision, it sounds as though the university has an interest in disclosing that information whenever the law doesn't prevent it from doing so. And I would prefer the original reading. Does that make sense?
Yes.
What was the rationale?
I think the may disclose when authorized by law. I see. So what you're suggesting is that it could be that the amendment, that is, we amend the note saying we amend the provision so the university may disclose where it may under the law, is actually not just where it must. Yes, I think you're right. That's an opening up of the opportunity for the university to disclose the information. Yes, Dan.
The way I read this was, I think that would be the best thing, but the university intends to disclose confidential information whenever it's in their interest. And once the law stops, they're going to go ahead and do it whenever they feel like it. And I think this was put in here just to make sure that people were warned that the administration will do that to them unless the law stops them. And, I mean, we can argue that they shouldn't release confidential information just because they feel like it. But they, by asking for this change, they stated they intend to. And so I think by putting this in, what it is just warning people that these JA proceedings are not confidential in the usual sense of the word, that the university feels like they it's in their interest to release the information, and they're not forbidden by law to do so. They're going to go ahead and do it. And I think that's why the CJC put that in there. It's not that they liked that idea.
The CJC didn't.
Oh, who did?
This was a request by the president
okay.
to change.
I think what they're doing is signaling, saying, you know, they'll divulge confidential information whenever they want, unless the law stops them, and that the person needs to be warned of this, so that they agree to cooperate with the JA procedure. They don't think that they've got real confidentiality, that the university will, unless the law stops them, the university will go ahead and divulge when it's in their interest. And I think what this does is just make sure the person is fooled in thinking the JA procedures are confidential.
Perhaps. The first sentence, it seems to me, the university will take reasonable measures to ensure the confidentiality of the proceedings and records, sets the tone for the paragraph, making it appear as if the university would not want to, you know, just divulge the records because they think it's in their interest alone.
But the rest of the paragraph,
with that one word change, makes it appear as if it's a warning that they may want to do it for other reasons than just when it's required by the law. Yes?
I think the may required might have been a problem. Maybe it will solve any wrong way. So because they're required, I think maybe they didn't want the word may, but if it was required, they would. So perhaps if it says the university will disclose otherwise confidential information when required.
I think that's correct.
I think it's good if they say will when required by law.
And maybe that was everybody's intent.
Kathleen, any comment?
the subcommittee item.
Yep.
I must admit, the name was being more confusing there, and I made a note to myself, maybe we should clarify that.
Good, we can do that very easily. Tomorrow.
There are a number of ways that I can use in terms of the loans where, in the original form, we're required to use the university may disclose the confidential information required. May could be read as will.
Right. So I guess it's a question of bringing that to the council's office, university council's office attention, and asking them what their intent is there. Whether their intent is, in fact, as Dan suggests, warn people that they could well, be releasing records when they're allowed to, even if they're not required to do so, or whether they have the intent of saying something like Randy was suggesting, which is the university will disclose the information, confidential information, when required by law. Charlie.
It seems to me that it becomes clearer when you read the next two clauses. There are, it seems to me, three circumstances if they are authorized by law to reveal it, or when they might wish to do so, to protect the safety and well-being of the university community or the integrity of proceedings under this code. And those are the two circumstances under which they may disclose it if they are authorized by law to do so.
The problem, though, is that the when precedes when authorized by law and when necessary, as if they are two separate clauses.
Yeah.
And so if they were merged, or if the will became, if the will and what was intruded, it might make it clearer. Ellis.
Yeah, I was just going to say that exactly the same thing to Charlie, except that if these are three separate circumstances, then theoretically, if the university had nothing to do with, quote, the law, and simply felt it's within the best interest of the community, it could do it in terms of its interpretation of what the law was.
Right.
Okay. So, in fact, if number one never came up, authorization to release information by law, then it says they could do it when necessary to protect the safety or well-being of the university. Well, that's interpreted. The university decides whether it's necessary. There's nothing to do with the law.
Right.
Someone over in Day Hall can say, well, I think it is necessary. Let's do it.
Right. Good.
So that's what they
Well, I think this is something we have to ask. And I think thanks very much for bringing it to our attention. We'll want to bring this back as one of the new items for our meeting. So at least to get clarity on this particular thing, which was said to be at one point just a grammatical correction, but is obviously more than that. Harry.
Just reading from the minutes of the CJC meeting that it was approved in, and all that Kevin Claremont said was, it seems like you did change, easy change, and like I said, I think there was something about how it didn't really change the effect.
Right. So I think that though the points that have been raised are reasonable ones to bring forward, and we'll do that. Right? Don't you think? Kathleen? Yeah. Good. Any other questions about this?
Whoever the president or whoever the president decides that it's the way to do so. And so there's no constraints whatever. I personally would propose that it be tightened up.
Well, what we're going to do is take this to the committee and have a discussion. And we'll come back with something that is a clarification of what's intended. And if the intent is, in fact, that different point, then we'll is in fact what you're saying, then we'll have an opportunity to.
What's intended at this point in time, this may be in effect for 20 years.
Okay, so let's.
Somebody else intends to.
No, I understand. It's not a matter of intent; it's a matter of clarity of language. And if it's not clear enough to prevent the evil powers or something like that from taking it over, then so what we can do is reserve this last one as not being something that we are assenting to at this point. Robin, come up.
People need to also keep in mind that there is federal law to which the university can do things and cannot pertaining to a student's record.
Well, that's why it says, you know, this is required by law. This is what they have to do. I would see how you say, well, it's still there because they're not complying with the federal law. But that's not the issue.
No, the criticism is that, right, the difference between authorized and required. That is to say, if federal law authorizes you to do something, you don't necessarily have to do it. It's only you have to do it if it's required.
Right.
So so that's the matter of clarification. Kathleen.
I actually thought authorized sort of taking left a little bit from required. It's sort of the same that legal courses have been coming to
Could I suggest that if we're having these semantic arguments that this wording is likely to be misinterpreted and that it ought to be cleared up. If you said allowed instead of authorized, for example, that would be clear.
Right.
If you said the university instead of may reserve the right to, that would be clearer than may. So I think that this is a kind of more important than it was given credit for, I think, of provision. And it ought to be tightened up so that everybody in the room would agree exactly what it means.
Okay. Thanks, and we'll revisit that on the 23rd. Any other comments about pages 2 and 3? Or perhaps the bottom of 1 on 2 and 3? Yes, Dan.
I'm not sure which pages are numbered. This is...
This is the first page.
Right. There's a section on suspension for serious disruption to education and violence. And if I read this correctly, they want to add serious disruption to educational environment to ensuring public order. That seems to be kind of redundant. I mean, if there is a serious disruption to education environment, that would represent how the new test of disrupting public order. I think what they're doing here is trying to gain authority to suspend without these protections and things that don't rise to a disruption of the public order. If they have demonstrations they don't like the content of or the nature of that don't disrupt the public order in a general sense, they would like to be able to suspend for those as well. That's what the way it reads to me.
Randy?
Maybe you can come up with better words. The reason that was there was just in case somebody unleashed some kind of virus that screwed up everybody's computer.
Well, that would come under ensuring public order.
No, because the public is more broad than the university.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if there was, because I understand exactly what you mean. You don't want when I was in junior high school.
But they need to, if they're going to have
there's a requirement, they have to go to the fair.
I agree, but I think people should.
So the computer virus is a violation of public order.
Well, it depends on whether you call the university community the public as a whole. Well, it's part of it. Any other questions, comments? There is something to bring up with regard to that is, That is, the accused may require the president or designee to show cause for the suspension before the hearing board within 5 days. Okay. And this was thought about, talked about, as Randy was at most of the meetings, in fact, where it was, the meeting where it was discussed. The committee said 7-2 that it felt the change was appropriate. Okay. Any other comments about that, Ellis?
I just suppose back to when I was on the CJZ. Is this 5 business days? Is this 5 real days? Is this 5 days?
This 5 days. Holidays? The note that's there is just a short form for something that's spelled out much more clearly in there. I believe it's 5 business days. Yeah, I know, and we talked about it, and I think it was resolved. Kathleen, 5 business days. Is it 5 post office? 5 post office business days or 5 university business days? Does it include Labor Day? Okay. Any other comments? Yes. Sorry.
For this, if a student or the president suspends a student. Is a student appealing the suspension, or they go and decide if the suspension is warranted?
Show cause for the suspension means that you have to, within 5 days, the president or designee has to go before a hearing board and show the reasons why the student was suspended. So I presume that it would be...
I can't figure out the burden's on the student to show why he should not be suspended.
Oh, no.
The burden on the president to show why he should be.
Require the president or a designee to show cause.
Okay.
So that's, in other words, whoever suspends.
Okay.
Any others? Yes, Elizabeth.
I'm skeptical of using that as an example. That's so easy, and we all agree. And in fact, we've had a case of DUR as much in the back of the dungeons of where we dealt with the privileges. But I think you are aware of that. I agree with the community of owners of interest that it's a really vague and overdrawn. And I wish you would press them for more examples than prison virus, because, and you know, we talked about this before, that a peace march or something else could also be seen as a disruption of the educational environment.
Kathleen, I'll come back to you.
A couple of cases, students or state law that keeps people from performing duties in the offices, unauthorized marks, the bus traffic, the firearms, what is all this that actually happened, the kids trying to lay that down, there's another example where they weren't really breaking any rules, but it majorly disrupted the functioning of the office.
In fact, the shantytown that was put up outside Day Hall was taken down, and it was put up again in front of Andrew Dixon White House, and it was done very legally. So,
that's just an example.
Yes, but I think that these are not reasonable. Those are not appropriate examples. One reason is that. And it may be that somebody could appeal and say that by sitting down in the middle of Campus Avenue and blocking traffic was not a disruption of the educational environment in the 5-day period and might well prevail. What the examples that I was taught about was people who come into classrooms and make it effectively difficult, if not impossible, for the class to continue by protest. This is a campus-wide code, and people decided, in fact, there was sentiment on the campus CJC to the effect that I paid, and my parents are paying, and everybody else is paying for me to go to classes, and I don't, although I respect people's rights to tell their opinions, I don't want it to interfere with what I'm paying out. No, but that's the order that was discussed in one of the minutes. The sitting down in the middle of Campus Road was not brought up as one, and neither was the shantytown. Yes.
Maybe put that in there, avoiding serious disruption of classroom activity.
We don't have to do that. We have an entire list in the red book, and it's ready, educational environment. there's a whole list from A to D or whatever. So once you all the things that they considered in the past that exist right now in the section of the code, and it's called remedies.
I'm sorry. I'm going to have to call a home. I agree with Ellis's point is reasonable, that you need to educate ourselves about what is the educational environment, and I feel that the CJC has made a reasonable discussion of this, and when they put in serious disruption of the educational environment, it was with an understanding of what it is in the code, and they accepted it. So I'd like to, if we need to take a vote on this particular one, we can.
Well, Mark, with all due respect, that's what we're doing, this discussion. So, mm-hmm. yeah. so we need to refer things back to the CJC.
I mean, chair of the committee, and conventions, incidents with nonviolence that are considered as a so you and she seem to disagree on something.
Yeah.
Since this is the first I've heard of this list, I don't think I can be expected to vote in favor of putting structured education environment on a list I haven't seen yet and just heard it now.
Kathleen?
There are two main sections of the code that list violations. One is RAMFL, Regulations for Maintenance of the Public Order. The other one is REMI, Regulations for the Maintenance of the Educational Environment. And one of those, I believe it's REMI, is required by the Henderson Law, state law.
RAMFL, Public Order.
That's why we have two sets of violations.
Okay, so
if you talk about educational environment here, you're talking about a wide range of that's set in front of the code from way back required by law. So I get too caught up into the educational environment language here. What would be added would coincide with the rest of the code.
I intend to get caught up in it because we're authorizing this to be a new power where a person can go outside the regular procedures under this. I'd like to know what it is that we're asked to approve. And just because they've had it way back when doesn't mean it's probably good bad. I would like to know what this is. Before I would vote in favor of this change, I would have to be well educated what it is. And I've never heard of it. So, you know, that's just, I don't want to buy a pig in the poultry or something.
You know, the very same thing is that they said that students table handing out pamphlets is addressing the education environment. And you did bring up the South African Treaty, so that is true. Okay. And I may have an error in bringing those up. You know, I know.
Whether they're good or bad, I can't imagine a demonstration day home that would disrupt education.
Well, another example is
yeah, to be concrete, I guess I'd like to know whether the inclusion of this story would have made it easier to defend Danny Burleson and the others who were protesting in Day Hall against the raising of Red Bud Woods.
Tamara.
I'm wondering if this would, I mean, perhaps we might be able to give our vote on this given that some folks here don't feel comfortable voting on it, or maybe they would be a little more than they would have hoped. But if linking to the whole system of public order, if public order is understood as meaning that refer to this state explained and there is such a thing as remedy, then I wonder if the CJC would consider either making these terms capitalized to make them officially recognizing that to where they're coming from and not just, you know, lowercase words.
What is the list?
Well, the list might be hundreds of examples long, but it could refer, for example, this committee could say, attorney is against the purpose of ensuring public order and safety or avoiding serious disruption to the educational environment, as previously explained in example, see article whatever.
Which one?
Okay. I guess we have to move out of here, and I think the solution is to say that this is clarifying the statement, serious disruption of the educational environment is necessary, and that's another matter to send back to the send back to the meetings that will precede our considering this in April 23rd. So, Kathleen? Yeah, well, we have to move on. So I think that's another matter we'll have to bring on. Any other questions about this? Okay. Yes.
I feel like our issue of the public order and not education environment is going to be the final law.
You feel what? Marty?
The question we have is our own public order now, like the educational environment stuff is already dictated by the law.
It's the other way around.
No, public order is dictated by the law. Educational environment is not. I think Kathleen misspoke on that because it's RENE. Educational environment is in fact entirely in the purview of this body. Public order is not. Yes.
Okay, I'm looking at it right here, the protein on the data, the code of conduct, where it spells out regulations for the maintenance of public order, Title 2,
right.
And Title 3, regulations for the maintenance of the educational environment.
Right.
Each title section.
Right. Yes, but we're concerned only with educational environment.
Okay, but it's, first of all, it's discussed here in the same manner. If we don't have a problem with public orders, why would we have a problem with the educational environment? It is delineated in the same manner as maintenance of public order. And if our issue is that we've never seen what's been spelled out and you're ready, well, that's our limitation in not being up to date on what is spelled out in the campus code of conduct.
But what if
we don't know what it says? We should go back and read it.
Well, unless these are cases, I agree with you that if these are court cases, because they've been judicial rulings, then we're powerless to have any effect on it. But if this is just, you know, cases where the university prosecutors is just doing this, I don't see any reason, you know, 30 years ago people might have felt differently about that than we do now. I don't see any reason to accept those assumptions without considering discussion. That, you know, I would argue that a shanty count, I never saw this, I see what he did, but the protest for discussion is how that's going. We want a few ideas to make it, but it didn't do that. So we didn't, and Reagan didn't, and we were the two people who were sitting behind us.
Okay, I've gone to the page, Regulations for the Maintenance of Educational Environment, and there are, as Tamara has said, there are AABB, going down to AABB, going through the whole alphabet, a list of things, including disorderly conduct, hazing,
defrauding, stealing, and knowingly possessing stolen property. My point in raising this is that there's none that says sitting in the president's office is one. But, pardon me, wait a minute. And what I'd like to say is that we do have a code which is changed and changeable. And if we feel that it is not appropriate to have some of these violations that are listed here as violations any longer there, then they can be removed. If a person is suspended as a consequence of doing something that is not considered a violation of the educational environment, then that person has the right to appeal to the hearing board. I don't think we can debate whether a particular action or incident is a violation or not a violation of the educational environment here, and therefore remove this clause or vote against this clause based upon that kind of thinking. I think we have to trust the process at this point. Yes.
Well, looking at the list of things that are under the public order and things in our education environment, it seems like there's many, many things that have been put under education environment that should be under public order, like sexual assault and things like this. But that list is kind of a mess. But it includes in it some actions of public, police is all open for that.
Yep.
But I object, if crimes are being committed, obviously that should be under public order, not under education environment. And I think that's a problem with the list. But we don't want to open the door where the people that are in charge of prosecuting, and under this thing here, would be in charge of actually deciding and carrying out the punishment, would have the power to define what a disruption is. And that's pretty much what I think they're looking for. And if they decide that being made uncomfortable by somebody's protest is a disruptive education environment, they may be able to do it.
They may be able to find a reason to do that under the existing legislation.
I think looking at those lists, I think they have mixed things which are educational environment disruptions, but just crime against the public order and just individuals. So I think that list is a bit of a mess.
Any other thoughts? Kathleen? We really do have to give other folks a chance to finish our business here. So I'm going to say there's 2 minutes more, and then we'll have to stop.
This is the case of
In fact, UA members have the right to petition the Codes and Judicial Committee to come up with language in any area of the code, and I hope we will. This is we've said this to the administration in our defense of the need to have this continue as it is and not be taken over by the central administration. And if we want to exercise our responsibility to make changes, then our right and responsibility, then we'll have that opportunity. That's what we've accomplished. But we can't really do that in such particulars as now. I think the Codes and Judicial Committee has made a recommendation that these two stay in, and these two phrases he added, and I think we could say we don't accept it, or we can ask them to but reconsider, but I don't think we can argue it anymore here. So, okay, I guess we have to sound out whether or not we're going to send this back to, how many folks are interested in having those phrases be clarified a little bit more on the committee, by the committee? How many? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. All right, a majority would like to have more information provided on what those phrases mean, and that will go back. The remainder of what is said here, I'd like to, so minus those 2 points and a small addition of the word even, everything else is acceptable as stands.
There's another question too.
Well, yeah.
That has a problem. I think any of these codes have a problem when you have intersection of civil authority and campus authority. And I think there's still problems with that here as well. The statement that the university can't see to defer this from the proceeding, they have to. I mean, there's a set of up there, but this stuff is adjudicated by the public court. I think it needs some clarification. For example, if somebody is convicted in a convicted or acquitted in public court, the university can't take precedence over that.
But you have to read the next two sentences, yes?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, and nevertheless, the judicial administrator, the next sentence, should consider whether justice counsels withholding the exercise of the university jurisdiction until public officials have disposed of the case by conviction or otherwise. So, in other words, your feeling is that that in all circumstances, even in one where the university's principles are at stake, the university should defer.
So if somebody is accused of a theft and acquitted of it, the university can take upon itself to convict them of it and throw them out separately with them?
No, they can throw them out before.
It's the problem. You know, I understand why they want to do this. They need to, I think, if they're going to turn something over to civil authorities, they need to work with the civil authorities to protect the public. They can't, just have their, this is philosophically, it's not legally double jeopardy. They can't run their own courts in conflict with the civil courts. They can't run their own, if they want to withhold some things and not turn it over to civil authorities, I have some problems with that too, but, at least the person's only being convicted once. The problem is, if you go through this JA proceeding, all of the testimony, everything that happens there, can be subpoenaed by the prosecutor.
No, that's already that's what is meant by the university that the judicial administrator should consider whether justice counsels withholding.
Well, they should consider, but I think this is a problem area. That's all I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Is that I don't know what to do about it. I don't have a solution. But I think saying that these very important things are adjudicated in public means saying you don't have to defer to the.
Kathleen? Ellis?
You don't all the time. It happens all the time. Someone can be found innocent in criminal court and still found guilty in civil court. And then vote yay. There are situations, I can't think of one offhand, but I've had cases that I remember where things have happened in court. People have been found innocent or guilty down in Thompson County Court and been deemed by the JA that the person should still have some kind of either a hearing or something up here or not. And that is not double jeopardy.
Whether it's double jeopardy legal or not, I don't know that it's a good idea.
And it exists now. So this isn't necessarily adding something that doesn't exist already.
The standard of proof is another is our home about the
David, do you want to say Bob, do you want to say anything about this? Okay, you're on the CJC, I just thought.
You should remember that some of this wording did come from the administration with a compromise that was struck. And so, if you take it back, I can only imagine that they were, for instance, would probably not be even happy about it. And so I wish that he was here, actually.
He'll be here on the 23rd.
Okay.
All right. If you'd like to, we will we'll bring this one up too. All right, Kathleen, and we'll bring up the question that it will have to be defended. But the CJC has already acted on it, and thanks for all your advice. I think we left a couple of things intact, and but I think it's probably a good idea that we had the debate right now, because then it'll prepare us for the 23rd. Did I mention the 23rd? 23rd of April. Everybody put it on your calendars. We'll get everything of this all back to us, along with three other things. And once again, the UA has the right to say what it does and act the way it does, because this is your document. I would suggest that you, be thoroughly ready to defend positions that are different from what the CJC has concluded.
Thank you very much, by the way, for your patience, Alan. And we can call on Alan Mittman to present to us concerning the winter holidays.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I found the conversation very interesting. I have a lot of thoughts myself, but I'll move on to my topic. It's really just to begin a conversation and see if the UA would hopefully be interested in continuing it. It's based on the guidelines of the display of religious symbols you have for you, which the UA adopted some time ago. I've traced to at least the 1990s and maybe even earlier. You know, its first bullet point really set forth the sense of the UA with respect to displaying religious symbols on campus. Typically, the additions come up during the holiday time in December when offices are decorated in some fashion with a religious symbol. That's when our office hears from time to time from people questioning what's been put up or asking, can we put this up or should this be put down, that sort of thing. And we are guided by your guidelines, frankly. That's the sense that we take to it. As a result of these guidelines the UA adopted, further sort of examples have been provided in the second big box there, guidelines for inclusive seasonal displays. So it's actually very practical. It talks about types of displays that would be consistent with the guidelines, no place, for example, those that should be discussed within the unit, be decorated with bowls, garlands, and lights, which type of thing is consistent, but nonetheless, the recommendation is that they be discussed where the decorations would be put up. And then there's a listing of things that are deemed to be not consistent with either the guidelines or commitment to diversity and inclusiveness. And the reason I've come forward today and asked for some time is to see if it's time to revisit these guidelines in light of some changes in both the ways that employers generally view, quote, religion in the workplace, and also the university's enduring commitment to diversity and inclusiveness. Is it in fact, this is a question I'd like to raise, and see if they'd be interested in following up with us, is it in fact time to take a look at these and see where we might want to move to allowing more exhibitions rather than restricting them in some fashion as a recognition of a way of promoting inclusiveness and inclusiveness in respect to religious issues in particular in the workplace. To give you a brief context, the university adopted a religious accommodation policy, which you may or may not be familiar with, is 6.13.8, which governs requests for accommodation by faculty, staff, and student employees, so that if a working person at the university sought to have some change in his or her schedule to permit religious prayer, sought to have a change in clothing, be respectful of religious needs, start to have a change in meeting time, to be respectful of certain observances, things like that, there's a formal way to bring that up. And it's a very consensual process. It's intended to involve the unit, an HR representative, and ultimately our office, if there's any disagreement. What we've seen increasingly is the phenomenon where more such requests are happening. They're trickling into our office, but we know that these accommodations are being made. Holidays, for example, the university posts a calendar of major sort of holidays. There are 22 of them in the year. If you look at the interfaith calendar that's on the web, there are 22 in March alone, if you took every possible holiday that religions might observe. It has been prevailing sentiment, as the literature indicates, that, quote, religion should be left at the office door. This was a view and a sort of an attitude that employers typically had. That view and attitude is undergoing significant change over time. So the reality is today that actually addressing religion, since it can clearly be at the core of a person's identity, and not bringing it into the workplace, may make it extremely difficult for some individuals. And we deal with issues like that in the accommodation area, but it comes up in the religious display every year, where people feel strongly about how things might be. We hear it from both sides. There might be a small unit. I remember a request that erected a small, pretty much a Christmas tree. This was not something, a pine tree with bows on it or white sort of lights. It was really decorated as a Christmas tree. It had been there for years. It was up. Presents were being exchanged. And I guess a new member of the unit that had a tree was previously called up and said, I'm not really comfortable with it in my unit. And it was resolved in a consensual way. We all are aware of the fact that there are increasing numbers of diverse religions on campus. And in fact, a recent report by SHRM, Society for Human Resource Management, which is a respected HR organization, did a survey of religious accommodations. And it happens to mention at the top that special decoration of office space for holidays was the most frequent religious accommodation offered by organizations. Others were allowing employees to display materials, religious materials in their work areas, accommodating interests of a religiously and culturally diverse employee through decorations, offering flexible scheduling or time off for religious observances. So it's pretty much recognized that decorations is one of the areas where employers have stepped forward and said, yeah, we're going to deal with this and do some accommodation. Cornell is fairly unusual in the fact that we have a written policy that outlines our commitment to religious accommodation. The law requires religious accommodations under certain circumstances. We adopted sort of the law and made some changes to Cornell's meetings. But every employer, according to this survey, is dealing with the issue. I happened to write an article which relied heavily on the UA guidelines and that poster that I gave you, that's in the material. And I did get a couple of calls about that, using holidays to celebrate inclusiveness. And I did get a couple of calls consistent to what we're hearing around, that I am interested in more, in maybe more decoration, or even doing something more religious than these guidelines suggest. Should they be combined in a multi-religious display? It's important to me, how should I do it in my cubicle? Am I in the back of an office where nobody comes in and can I display something? Or am I at the front desk where hundreds of people might come by a day at Day Hall? And by the way, closing down Day Hall, I'm a resident there, might interfere with the educational environment. I have to make a point of order about that. But so people do ask those questions quite a lot. They come up though mostly during the holiday time. So the question I've come to is really just to get a sense of whether or not there's an interest. I don't know exactly your functioning, whether there's a committee or whether there'd be an ad hoc interest in re-looking at these well-tested regulations and guidelines. They do speak to this very issue. There's a lot of in there that talks about inclusiveness and trying to be open to the university. And maybe it's the time to just take another look at it and see if there's some undercurrent trends and under the commitment to inclusiveness, particularly with respect to different religions, to take another look. I'm not advocating a particular change at this moment,
simply raising the question is whether there's an interest to have a dialogue with our office, perhaps the representative of CURIW, we work with all the time in this area, someone like Janet Shortall, which many of you may know, is particularly involved in accommodations that come up students, for example. Go to her and meet with Charlie, the dean of faculty responsible for student accommodations, for changing the test date, extending the paper, that sort of thing. And we've worked with Charlie and with Janet on these. So I was thinking of forming a small group that might just take a look at this to see if there is some revision that might be in order, to bring it back to UA for consideration. Really, my purpose here. Happy to answer any questions or comments, and look forward to hearing back from whoever might be designated to see if this is something that would be pursuable.
Well, we have two connections with this. One would be through Family Services Committee, I would suppose, as some relationship to Human Services, and the other would be through our not yet activated religious committee, CURW committee. Ellis, is that right? There's a CURW committee in which we are, of which we are the convener. But like the campus store and other committees, we haven't been active in that.
Well, that's like the perfect committee
Right. Right. Well, it would be, I mean, we wouldn't need to convene that committee alone. I think what we could do is at least find somebody here who has an interest and designate that person as the liaison to what you're doing, and then should it materialize into something we want to bring to the Religious Life Committee, I've forgotten the name of it, what is it, the committee that we have that has to do with Annabelle Taylor?
The United Religious Work Advisory Board.
Right.
But it's been dormant for several years.
That's what I was just saying. So the first thing to do is find out if there is anybody who is so inclined in this body. Not yet. Randy. Randy is inclined. Thank you very much. Then I guess Alan and Randy, you will make some contact and discuss this. Thanks. And then if you have an interest, Randy, in bringing something like that to our attention, maybe we can, I guess, make this. Janet is on the CURW board, Janet Shortall, who Alan mentioned. So there's some connections there already. Thanks. Any questions to Alan? Thanks very much for coming. And I think you've provided us with links if anybody wants to make comments to you directly. We have right now a 16th of April meeting scheduled as a backup. We will not be, unless there's some interest in having more discussion about the campus code then or something of that sort. On the 16th?
Well, either before the 23rd or after.
Well, we're going to have another after the 23rd on May 7th. I don't know, Ari, does the meeting on May 7th include everybody who is currently on the UA?
May
7th.
That's our last
meeting. Includes the newly seated members of the UA.
But it's not, so that means the people who are going off in 2008.
That's meant to be an organizational meeting.
Well, I understand, but the people who are going off in 2008, are they still on?
No.
All right. So I guess the thing we need to do is, I don't know, how is the
there
body...
There may be an exception for the employee members because I think they're appointed later than everyone else.
Yeah. But we're trying to discuss whether or not we need another meeting to discuss these problems and issues. And I'd like to have a little bit of comment on that in the minus 1 minute that we have left.
I would recommend...
I think it's safe to have.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Let's do it that the 16th or whatever.
16th of April is a backup meeting for us.
Everybody on board?
So that will be just shifting what we're going to do on the 23rd to
no,
the
23rd. Because it's, we won't have anything ready for us. Oh, no, it's a meeting prepares for acting on the 23rd.
So I guess I'm talking about what are we going to talk about? That's like my point.
David?
Well, I can't be here. I'm
16. And who else was interested in this kind of, in this meeting?
Unless we just want the CJC to come and kind of go through some of their explanations so we have more of a background.
I think we should use that first clarification.
Yeah, that might not be the worst idea, but just so we know what we're planning on doing.
Come up with a clarification of the 7 and introduction of the 3 should...
Yeah, I have a feeling the CJC is going to be busy. We're asking them to do a lot between now and the 23rd. So my feeling is that if we do something, it's as David suggests, which is 23rd and 30th. In other words, if we need a second meeting after the 23rd, if the 23rd doesn't cut it, we'll ask for the 30th. I'm proposing that to people because if we don't, as Jim is, Gage is suggesting, don't have a lot, I don't think we can ask the CJC members to come to the 16th because they'll still be busy working on resolving the other three or at least getting a position on the other three. Yes?
Eric, would you let everybody know when the CJC meets and where? And then if anybody wants to go to the CJC meeting?
We're having a, what's happened is the CJC voted to have a subcommittee of seven members, which will deal with these three issues. And the subcommittee meetings are going to be closed. And then the CJC will have a meeting after the subcommittee comes up with recommendations. And that would be probably in the week of the 16th. So we can let you know when the CJC meeting is coming to discuss the recommendations of the seven. The seven magnificent.
Because it seems like out of the 10, 3 were very, very important. 7 were a little less important. So since it's hard to come up with anything that's focused on some kind of balance.
That certainly is a reasonable thing to bring to the table. I don't know that people who voted, we voted 10-4 on one of them, which is everybody who voted of the 10 have to say what they wanted out of this. So if there was a compromise involved, then the points that are being objected to I'd say there are three things that we brought up now. Two of the three are a little bit harder nuts to crack. That is the educational environment one and one about, but anyway, two of the three are harder ones. But they're both involved, as you would put it, compromise. And of the three big issues that are going to be discussed, I think there's going to be have to be compromise too. Now the question is, what is the compromise for? What are we achieving through it? And that's reasonable to ask ourselves as a UA, whether or not we want to go out with a bang or a whimper.
It seems to me that the education environment is terribly important, and the CJC is really careful about this involves more people. It involves civil liberties, a lot of peaceful, nonviolent protests. It's always been one of the things that concerns more people. It does surprise me that was seated.
Well, I think it was seated in the country. I'm sorry.
Just not very well informed,
and not logical. And so I, you know, I wouldn't see the fact that they're acting in school and you're in the parking lot serving the environment. But Nike of it, the excited for trespassing, I think, includes the most famous and distinguished.
Yes, we understand that, but the problem is I don't know that we can raise, I don't think the university would have said that sitting in Redbud Woods was disrupting the educational environment. They certainly wouldn't have had however, sitting in Day Hall, they might. And that's a reason.
But I'm giving you a chance to say, we should not invest in assets.
Right. And that was, okay. Look, once again, we're arguing specific cases, and I think maybe specific cases are useful, but we can't do that right now. So, I guess we'll talk about how's the 23rd and the 30th, everybody.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's on. Thank you.
Hello.
Right now, that's where you see specifically.
All right, I'm coming to like 5. Well, I mean, I'll get there 5 to my car.
Thank you.
I'm supposed to say, I mean, it's not important. It's 3 feathers lighter.
Yeah.
They're like, well,
sorry.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.